go, Muniz. He's done it again. Oh, what a lovely goal. And I'm delighted for Sasha Lukic. It's his first goal for the club, and he'll love that. The Hammersmith Enders are on their feet. It's Muniz again. Oliver, 3-0 ahead.
Hello and welcome to the That's So Craven podcast, your Fulham podcast from Down Under. We are back again, this time to discuss the Brentford game coming up this weekend. A huge Southwest London derby against a team sitting slightly below us on the table. A game Fulham should be looking to win after what could be potentially called a fair result against Palace with a 1-1 draw going down to an absolute rocket. But talking this one through, we have Skibby. How are we going, mate?
Yeah, all good. And I was getting a kind of like, you know, PTSD when you're saying this is a mid-table team, which Fulham should beat. And it's just almost like we've been here before. But it's an interesting game. Local rivalry. Happy to unpack it.
Absolutely. And also to talk it all through, we have Elton. How are we going?
Good evening. Good afternoon. Hello to Dave bombing it up the M something. Towards Leeds. Give us a toot if you hear it.
I'm sure. I hope he's listening, and otherwise he's not dedicated enough. Guys, a lot to unpack. It was, like I said before, a slightly disappointing result against Palace. I think we all thought that this was a game that we could potentially win. Palace were in pretty good form. A 1-1 draw seemed sort of fair at the end of it. How did we sort of feel now it's been a couple of days to let it digest and let it settle? Do we feel a fair result? Do we feel we could have done better?
Fair result. I mean, I can't take it away from Palace. They hounded us in the first half. And I mean, if that was against Man City, we'd have been about 6 or 7 down at that point. So to go in at 0-0, take the lead, and then for Palace to sort of get a late comeback. I mean, it's what they deserved from their first half performance. Whether it was extraordinary performance from Palace is each to their own, I suppose, but were Fulham just that bad or were Palace that good? But I think overall it was fair.
Dad? Yeah, I mean, I think I want to kind of give it to them. I like the brand of football. I like it. I mean, no shade on Roy, but I think that's far more entertaining. We didn't handle it very well, but it was, attractive football. And I don't think they executed it perfectly, but good luck to them, you know. And I think there's something to learn from that. And I'm not quite sure. I'm not really sure why we haven't kind of developed that uber-pressing element to our game. I think if you aren't a team of the highest quality, then you've got to find interesting little ways to kind of get yourself, you know, up the table, up the ladder, really. And it doesn't matter without cheating. It doesn't matter how you do it. And a lot of sports over the years have found creative ways to better themselves, and I think something to be learned from it.
Yeah, I think just to add to that, I think you need 11 players who are all kind of settled in the squad, in the starting 11, and have taken on the same kind of philosophy and are on the same page. I think with Fulham, we don't necessarily have that. We know Pellini is going to be in the side, but who's going to be next to him? That chops and changes. You know, we don't necessarily have, with Tosin, that's now rumbled us a little bit because, you know, you're starting to try and build a core squad or core players who are, you know, have taken on this methodology. And, you know, if you're chopping and changing all the time, you're not going to see results. And I think that's what we saw with Palace. You saw a transitioning side, but with Fulham, yes, we'd love for them to take it on, but you need a settled core in order to sort of take that on. And I just don't think we're there yet, especially with Mitrovic leaving. You know, we were in transition again. How do we have to change the way that we play? You know, it just seems like we're always sort of there or thereabouts, but then we always have to sort of chop and change and sort of change our ideology. Palace, you're seeing the early signs here, and they're in transition. They're going to be, if they can keep this up and they add players who can complement Eze and Elise, they're going to be laughing next year, I think. And that's quite exciting to see for Palace fans.
I think you make a I think Skibby's making a very good point there, which is probably a whole other discussion around the degree to which that situation that we've got in the midfield actually unsettles us. It's a problem. You know, we don't have a working system in the middle. I think if you wanted to be optimistic about it, you could say we have some flexibility off the bench. But actually, I still think we're reaching for an optimal solution. We haven't found it.
Hmm. Yeah.
And when you think about the core that we had, sorry, Jack, just quickly, just we had Johansson, Kearney, and McDonald. And no one changed that. Nobody was within a shoo-in of going into that central midfield. We just had it on lockdown. And I think that's just key. Sorry, I will let you speak, Jack.
No. Well, it's a good point. I mean, Ollie Norwood came on as a sub like 30 times that season and just couldn't get into the team at all. And you're right, stability, it's key. And we saw stability last year because it was pretty much for the whole season at Polina and Reed together with Kearney coming off the bench. I think Kearney came off the bench like 30 times last season or something ridiculous. So we had that stability this year. Harrison Reed has maybe just not reached the same levels that he did last year. Lukic hasn't been impressive enough. Kearney is probably not the person you want starting most games. And so, I mean, we'll talk about it over the summer as well. It's definitely an area that I see Fulham need to improve on. And that will need to be done in the transfer market for sure. Look, I agree as well, Skibby. That Palace team, under new management, they look a different beast. A couple of good transfers for them. I think they need to bulk up the central midfield a little bit when you got Will Hughes and Wharton, I think, is the other centre mid. They're solid, but, you know, imagine if you added a player of Polina's kind of stature and ability in there and someone like Andreas Pereira sitting deep, they turn into a very good side all of a sudden. So, It was a disappointing result in some ways, but also a fair result. So I think we can probably put that one to bed and move forward. What we will do first, though, is just talk about the Discord, which we launched last week. It was about bang on a week ago. I think we launched it last Friday, maybe. And since then, we're up to almost 120 followers in there, which is just great to see. Really appreciate all the support so far from everyone in the Fulham community. Please do, if you're already a member, do share it with other Fulham fans that you know of who would be interested in joining up. It's a really good place to talk all things Fulham. We have places in there to talk about tickets, talk about match days, talk about the tactics that are being used at the moment and looking at some tactical analysis. We're fortunate enough to have Cottage Tactico as a member of the Discord, and he is very active in there as well, discussing a lot of his posts. We are up to date with transfer news pretty much live. We have direct feeds in from Fulham Transfer on Twitter as well, who's also very active within the Discord. So we're very fortunate because of that. There's dedicated spaces to talk about the women's team, the youth team. There's dedicated spaces for international supporters groups. We have some off-topic things talking about some still slightly Fulham-related gaming and other bits and bobs. So please do join up. We'll be expanding what we do in there day by day. The live stream of the podcast is in there as well, so do keep an eye out for that. And yeah, if you haven't found the link, it's in our bio on Twitter. You can find it on our link tree as well, or just reach out to any of us and we'll be able to share it with you. But we really do appreciate the support so far, and please keep it coming because we like it. Moving on to Brentford, the big game this weekend. It's away to Brentford. I had a quick look. We've only beaten Brentford twice in our last eight meetings with them, which isn't a very good record. I think it's three times. One of those is a playoff final. It's not a wonderful record. It's not a great away record against Brentford either. Brentford, it seems a little bit of a bogey team at the moment, and it's always away with derbies. It's always tough to get the result that you actually want, even if you are the better team on some days. Brentford have, I'd say, been struggling a little bit this season, but Skibby, thrown to you first, how do you see this one panning out? Do you feel like there's going to be the same atmosphere that you have in these derbies because both teams are now safe? I think Brentford confirmed safety. They're 10 points clear of the drop zone with three games to go. Do you think maybe that just takes the edge off this game a little bit?
Yes and no. I think Brentford still have a point to prove, I think, for this season, especially because it hasn't been a great season for them. They were flirting with relegation for a lot of that. I mean, they missed Ivan Toney massively. And now I think he's back, sort of in and out of the side. I think he's had some sort of rest up, but I think he's back. But I think definitely for them, I mean, they've always, and I'm sure Brentford fans will want to correct me here, but they've always sort of lived in Fulham's shadow a little bit. So I think they will take any kind of opportunity they can to get one over on us. So they've got the new stadium now. They're kind of sort of puffing their chest out a little bit. You know, we have been, they've been pretty much sort of better, one of the better teams in West London, put it that way, of recent times. And I think for them to come into this, they want to shore up that dominance that they have over Fulham. So I can quite predict quite a feisty affair and quite a good, I think once the handbrake's off, you know, the teams have got less pressure, that it's more entertaining anyway. But I do think that they'll want to get one over on us, not just the fans, but the team as well and the squad. So, yeah, I think it'll be a really good game, and we have to be on it. Obviously, our away form's not great, but we have to turn up, want to be in a West London derby and show that to our fans that are travelling. I say travelling, but going down the road.
They're still travelling. I think it's... whilst a Palace game is a London derby, it's just not the same. I think we could be in a dire sort of state and form, and I think Fulham players and fans are going to get up for this. There's, you know, can you imagine us being down in the dumps and a QPR fixture pops up? I think everyone gets up for it. In terms of the kind of result, I know we're not there yet, but it's very, very difficult to say. I mean, if Toney was scoring the number of goals he was last year, I think it's a different story. But I think we will put them away.
Well, I love the confidence. We'll put them away. Love that. I agree. I think a big factor here is Ivan Toney has been struggling this season compared to last year, where I can't remember the exact number of goals he scored, but since he's come back, it's definitely not the same Ivan Toney. I think there was a little bit of an aura around him almost, where whenever he picked up the ball, you kind of expect him to score. This season, he's scored 4 goals from 14 games. If you look at Muniz, who scored 9 from 27, it's at a much better rate than Toney. Well, I say much better, slightly better rate than Toney. But, you know, Muniz, a lot of those appearances have come off the bench as well. So I think it doesn't have the same gravitas as it did last year when you're coming up against Ivan Toney. You kind of know he's going to score against you. At the moment, looking at it, I don't know that he's the person we'd be most worried about. Say Wissa's had a very good season. He's probably going to score. Let's be perfectly honest.
Just because I can't stand him because of this whole debacle of, you know, he came back from the betting scandal and all this stuff, and he got a hero's return. Like, I was going to make some comparisons, which I won't do, but it's just ridiculous that how much praise and sympathy he got for what he did. Yeah. And you know, like, the man was betting against his own teams. Like, why is everyone treating him like a god? Anyway, so I don't really get into that. But then, you know, that's added to my kind of dislike for him, in a way that, you know, he was on the CEO, Life of a CEO podcast, telling about his struggles, and you're like, oh, cry me a river, mate. But, you know, just because of that, he is going to score on Saturday. But we just need to score more. But yeah. I just have to get out of there. Yeah, can't stand the bloke.
I don't think many people outside of Brentford fans can stand the bloke. And I agree with the comment, I think you made it earlier today, where I just don't understand how he still somehow commands so much respect from the Brentford fans, despite consistently for the last kind of 12 months saying, oh, yeah, I'm bigger than Brentford. I'm out of here. I'm going to go.
Wants to play Champions League, blah, blah, blah.
And, you know, seeing him sitting in an interview, I think it was maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, and they said, what's your perfect run-in for the end of the season? He goes, we win every game, I score a hat-trick in every game, and then I leave at the end of the season to go to a big club. And I just thought, imagine hearing one of your players do it. Someone who you've idolised. We had a little bit of that with Mitrovic last season, but
he didn't do it publicly.
He didn't publicly do it. He quietly was obviously forcing his way out of the club, but not sitting in interviews going, I'm better than this team. I can't wait to leave and go play at a proper club and play Champions League football. And I would hate to have that happening. And what I don't understand is Brentford fans, you know, bending the knee to him and just saying, you're my God and you're the best player that's ever played for us. Because I know for us, Mitro leaves and he's kind of dead to the fan base now, and everyone wants to see him do badly, but Brentford seem to see Tony as this son that can do no wrong in their eyes. It's baffling, but I'll be glad to see him back.
It's not really.
I hope he goes off to Europe somewhere.
If you're desperate for recognition, you won't care how you get it. And if Tony is the guy that they see can carry them to places they want to be, then, you know, he's the man. They won't care. It's a bit sad, but it's true.
I guess you need to be fired by someone.
But to be fair, you talk about Brentford fans, you know, what about the whole of the England setup? You know, they made life particularly easy for him, and there was obviously lots of noises that he was wanted in the England squad. So it's not limited to Brentford.
I was at the game where he scored the penalty, by the way, the Belgium game. I didn't cheer. I have to put that on record. I sat down.
Good man. Good man.
Because I'm not cheering at me.
But how many people did cheer?
That's irrelevant. You know. They're all drunk idiots. Yeah, there you
go. Not you, though. Not you. When you look at this Brentford side, there are dangerous players in there. Looking on the wings at Wissa and Mbeumo, who've both had very good seasons. They're probably a little less sturdy at the back. They've got a few injuries this year. They've lost Rico Henry, Ben Mee, Josh De Silva, who, you know, would definitely add some depth to that team. But they're still very strong, playing at the back. Ethan Pinnock, Sergio Reguilón, Christopher Adjo, Nathan Collins. It's still a good back line. I'd say a big weakness that we didn't exploit last time that I think we really should have was Flecken in goal for them, who looked very flappy on multiple occasions. I'd really like to see us put him under a bit more stress. And I think now having Muniz in the side, who I saw a stat today that he is at the higher end of attempts on goal per game in the Premier League. I think only Darwin Núñez has more attempts on goal per game than Muniz does, which is great to see. And it's what you want from a striker, just pepper a goalkeeper and eventually you'll score the goals. And I think against someone like Flecken, that's actually works massively in our favour.
And to be fair, Núñez has most of those shots in an offside position.
Correct. I think it is the graph. I mean, if you check out Twitter, I think it's on there. I think it was shared by... It was either Cottage Tactico or random Fulham stuff, but find it out for yourself. But basically, the way that it showed this graph was Muniz was on par with Erling Haaland in terms of chances created in 90 minutes, but it was just the conversion rate. That was all that was missing. So to say that we've got a striker who is getting in the positions and creating the same amount of chances as Erling Haaland is pretty ridiculous. And if he can become more clinical, then... You've got a serious player there.
Bring it up for those
on the live stream now.
Yeah, we actually... Gee, thank goodness you've got a Discord at your fingertips, Jack. Well done. who's that run by? Tell us again.
good point. This was actually a very quick Google on that for Cottage Tactico. It was Cottage Tactico who shared it.
Yeah. What I was going to say, we were actually chatting about this, and... I was saying that we talk a lot about this, and we certainly have been talking about Muniz in this way, that arriving at the right place is about, in football intelligence. And he's got it because he has shown week in, week out that he does get himself into the right positions. And I fully believe that I know he's, you know, in terms of ages on the planet, he's not much different to Haaland, but I think Haaland's been playing at a high level for longer. And I believe that Mooney's has shown himself to be really coachable. And I think I fully back the guy to actually change that conversion rate and, you know, for us to continue to see improvement there. I reckon if there was an opening, I think I could just about pick him up as a player agent.
Hypothetically, yeah. Then, if you were to put Mooney's in the City side, would he be on a similar goal tally as Haaland?
No, I don't know. No, not at all.
Not with De Bruyne feeding him and basically someone feeding him.
Maybe still not the same. Maybe not the same amount, but I think he'd actually be the other side of Nunez and probably have 6 or 7 shots per 90 minutes. And I reckon he'd probably, his conversion rate might jump up a little bit because he would get better service. But it's the one thing with Man City, and it's kind of a different conversation entirely, is the fact that Man City often have very congested boxes that they have to deal with. And does that suit Muniz's style? Maybe not as much as it suits Haaland, who's probably got 3 or 4 inches on Muniz. But look, I think the conversion rate is obviously something that you want to be as high as possible. You look at Chris Wood there right at the top, Isak as well, who's been great this season. But if you look at Watkins and Solanke, who've both been very good this season, they're only floating at, what's that, maybe like 17, 18%. Muniz is down at about 13% at the moment. All you need to do is score a couple of goals this weekend from 3 shots, and he probably does jump up quite significantly on this graph and maybe gets close to 15%. And it looks like the majority of strikers sit between that 15 and 20% mark. And I think if he it's not a huge amount of work that he has to do to get up a little bit higher there. So I have total faith that, you know, he will be able to. Also considering the stats would take into account a lot of his sub appearances, and a lot of those shots at the end of games when he's coming on for 5-10 minutes are, you know, speculative at best. So I think it'd be really interesting to see this chart at this point in next season, when he's had a full season under his belt, probably as the starting striker or at least on rotation with another striker. And I think I hope we'll be pleasantly surprised by the outcome. I guess back to the game, and let's actually talk about the Fulham lineup. So first things first, obviously last week we saw Tosin dropped. I'm expecting we're not going to see him back in the side anytime soon. How did you guys feel about Diop, and are we happy with Diop going forward, at least for the rest of the season?
Skip, you want to have a go?
Anyone.
I'm always going to be sort of lenient towards Diop, I think, especially in this circumstances where it's difficult to start your first game since February. You've got to come against Mateta. You've got to basically be in a position where Tosin was quite forward thinking and picking out those forward passes. And I think that's where we saw the struggle, was that we had a way that we wanted to move the ball. We wanted to sort of try and focus it, you know, down the right hand side. And we wanted to be able to bring in sort of Castagna. And I believe it was Bobby, wasn't it, on that side? So to be able to move the ball quickly, progressive passes, he wasn't really up to it. And I think that's fair enough. And when you haven't been part of the squad, you're going to be rusty. And that's what we saw. And I think, but as the game went on, he got more comfortable. And I think we'll definitely start to see him sort of pick up and improve towards the end of the season, as long as he doesn't pick up any injuries. But I think for me, we touched upon it in the last pod, is he going to be the guy going forward? Don't know. But I think for us, he is good enough. He just needs that run in the side. But I think, especially coming against sort of Brentford, who potentially may not be firing as much as they would like at the moment. I think he is the right person to come in, and I don't think I would be as comfortable with Tim Ream on the left and Bassey on the right, because we saw how that went. So I think Diop is the way forward as it stands, and I think Tosin, yeah, he should be. I mean, I know he was on hospitality last game, but he'll probably be selling programs against City. I don't know what they're going to get him to do. But yeah, as long as he's not anywhere near the dressing room, I think that's the main thing.
Yeah, look, I'm fine with Diop seeing the season out now. And I think he's okay, and I think he'll be okay. I'll forget what I think, but I cannot believe that Diop is actually going to be okay for Marco next season as his first centre back on the right. I don't think he's actually good enough to be the starting guy to actually be part of that solution of how we play out from the back. I can't believe it. And even though Tosin didn't have all aspects of what we wanted, he was probably better and good enough with his feet most of the time. So, all that points to, for me, is that in the summer, I'm sure we're going to be looking for another centre-back.
Almost 1,000% sure. I mean, Tim Ream, let's be honest, I think the time's probably passed now for Tim Ream. He's got another year left on his contract. Definitely a good player to have on the bench as a bit of a backup. We know he's got experience. We know he can do it to some extent. Diop, I agree. He looked a little shaky at first, but definitely grew into the game. But is that the person that you want taking that position full-time? Almost certainly not.
Not at all.
Again, I'd be more than happy to have him as a backup who comes off the bench to add some stability or takes the occasional game here and there. But I think centre-back is almost certainly going to be one of our main areas for strengthening next season. There's reports already coming in of multiple different options. Amrabat from Man United, Thiago Silva from Chelsea. It definitely feels like that's somewhere that we've already got our eye on, especially knowing that Tosin is out the door. I was about to say pretty much out the door, but he's completely out the door. He's so far out the door, he's in the hospitality tent. I think that's a really important area for us to improve in as well, because this season the defence has been fairly good, but not wonderful. It could definitely be stronger, and I think we need to do some work in the back line. Next thing to talk about, the centre of the park. We obviously saw Harrison Reed start on the weekend. He did a fairly good job. What are we expecting against Brentford, though? Do we see the return of Lukic? Do we see Kearney come in? How do you guys see this one playing out?
Answers on a postcard, I reckon. I mean, every time I've predicted it, I've got it wrong. So, like last week, I said, yeah, fair enough, Lukic. Might as well keep it as is. And, Reed comes in, who wasn't even part of the options. But I think maybe we saw that, or we anticipated the high press. Therefore, we wanted legs in the midfield. Someone who's going to chase down, can get the ball out of their feet, but, can also defensively press them back. And I think we did see that for our goal. I think it was Castagna with Reed. Castagna was high up the pitch. Reed had slotted in at right back, and the high press from Fulham actually got a misplaced pass, and that's where we scored from. So I do like that aspect. I do think that works for us. Do you necessarily get that ability with Lukic or Kearney? Probably not. That's probably where you're looking to sort of control the midfield. But I guess for me, looking at sort of the stats from Brentford, they don't necessarily dictate the ball. Like you don't see high 50s or early 60% possession. So there's going to be a battle there. And I think we need to put in a team to face the battle of sort of the 50-50 possession. And I think that person for me is Reed or Lukic. I don't think Tom Kearney can make as an impact. But for me, I'm always an advocate for if it's not broke, don't fix it. So I think Reed for me didn't do anything wrong to not deserve a start this weekend. But you know, Marco has surprised me before. So, and going back to the early start of the podcast, I don't see it as a solidified position. It just seems to be that one that's always in rotation, and anyone can come in for anyone in centre midfield apart from Polina. So it's going to be down to Marco, but I can see it being either Reed or Lukic.
I'd be very surprised if Reed is named in the squad in any way, shape or form. I think he got quite a nasty groin injury, and those are notorious. They don't heal quickly at all. Even if it's a slight strain, they're tricky. At this stage of the season, I can't see him being played. That would be a miraculous recovery. He looked very uncomfortable when he was waving his arm to come off, and he did pull up. You probably didn't see that fully from the Putney end, Skibby. He looked uncomfortable.
Yeah, it didn't stop him, though. He didn't go down. He was still running around.
That's because he's a nutter. He's a little nutter. Yeah. he's pretty nuggety. Maybe. I can see this being Polina Lukic, which is the kind of dynamite pairing that we don't love. We'd love it to work, but it hasn't consistently worked yet. Yeah, I don't think it'll be Kearney. I think it'll be Lukic, Polina.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think it's kind of makes sense for Lukic to come in here. Harrison Reed. I think if Harrison Reed was fit, he might start. But I think you're right. If there's a little niggle there, he's probably going to sit out. Kearney again, I'd love to see Kearney start, but I just don't think it's going to happen. So it's almost certainly Lukic for me. Moving further up the pitch, I think it's probably likely that we'll see the return of Willian, who, you know, had a bit of a niggle, came on off the bench and looked to make an impact almost instantly. Skibby, how much of a difference does Willian make when he actually starts?
Huge. Absolutely huge. I mean, he may not be... I may not be the fastest winger that we have, but he actually might be. But it's just his calmness on the ball creates things.
Quicker than Adama?
One of. So he's definitely the quickest, but I definitely think he'd give Wilson a good foot race. But yeah, he just seems to pick up the ball and just have that mentality of getting at your man, getting and make things happen. And it's so crucial to have. And we just don't seem to have anyone else who plays, not Adama, who kind of has that mentality. So I think for me, it's just really crucial that you have, you know, the really calm head on the shoulders, but yet skill, definitely one of the most skillful players in the squad, and bring that together and you make them things happen. And I think the sort of relationship that he has on the pitch and off the pitch with Pereira and Muniz is really key as well to sort of Fulham's success in the final third. Without him, we just seem to really lack any kind of control, any kind of drive in that sort of attacking the final third. And I think Willian just brings that. So if the rumours are true that he doesn't sign the new deal and he goes off somewhere else, then he is going to be a huge miss for us. We need to find someone who sort of can bring that element of the game to Fulham. But it's good that he was back on the bench against Palace, but yeah, definitely no brainer starter for Brentford.
I think not only is he fantastic to start and carry the ball forward creatively, his link up with Robinson, et cetera, the stuff we go on about all the time. But one of the things that I love about the guy is his ability to play a pressure releasing pass when we're squeezed up so tight. He's got the vision. It's almost like he's always looking for a man completely away from the little pack that he's involved in, and he'll knock a ball out which will actually release us and allow us to push forward. Really clever stuff. I like his cleverness. It's just next level.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the biggest thing for me, and we sort of touched on it a little bit, is the fact that he brings other people into the game, but not just that. The fact that when he's not there, we had Iwobi having to play out on the left, or we're playing players out of position because he's such a key cog on that left-hand side. When he's on form and playing well, he brings the best out of Robinson, and I think Robinson is probably up there as one of our better players this season because of that as well, because they've had an extra season to just work on that link up together. And then when you bring Tom Kearney into the fold as well, and the three of them start moving around on that left-hand side, it's beautiful football. And then you get Andreas Pereira getting involved as well. It does just all sort of come together, which is what we've been looking for. And when he's not there, it's we just feel like we're just lacking that little bit of magic. And I really hope he's fully fit and available to start against Brentford, because I think without him, we're just not the same team at the moment. Final one on the lineup itself, Rodrigo Muniz. We talked about how we wanted to see him go through a bit of a dull patch where he doesn't score goals and see how he bounces back from that. He did score that goal against Palace and finally came back. Do you think he's proven himself enough to be a starting striker for us next season, or do you think there's still a bit of work to do and that's still a position we need to focus on?
100%.
Yeah, he's proven it to me. The only thing we haven't seen him do is take a penalty. We don't. That's the one element we just don't know about. Look, I'm fine if he does everything Muniz does and wants to give the ball to a Willian or Pereira or someone else. I'm fine with that. I've got absolutely no problem. My striker right now, that doesn't have to be his job. But, you know, we would all like our number nine to be able to smash a penalty or, you know, have that confidence to do that and lead the line. But, nah, he's definitely proved himself. I'd like to see him get a goal against City. That'd be great.
I mean, on the penalty thing, Andy Cole, I think he took one penalty in his entire Premier League career. So I'm not sold on the penalty thing. But yeah, I mean, he's just a guy, isn't he? He's everywhere. He's making things happen. Even when it's not going his way, he's still creating chances. He's feeding off scraps, which I think is great for that kind of striker. And there's a hunger and a determination to improve, which we just keep seeing. So I think as long as he still maintains that mentality of he hasn't hit a glass ceiling, he can just keep going and keep going and banging on the door and just trying to become the best striker he's got to believe he's one of the best strikers in the league right now. So why not continue with that mentality and try and improve on that? And I think as long as he stays humble as he is and carries on improving, then absolutely. Don't get me wrong, I'd love a striker to come in to compete with him. Like, how great would it be to not have to rely on bringing someone off the bench who, you know, is a bit meh as a striker? It'd be great to have someone on waiting in the wings who could potentially take his position, or, you know, if we're losing a game, to have them both playing up top and be as crucial or as clinical as a finisher as Muniz is. So, yeah, I think we should definitely be investing in a striker. But for me, if they make him the number nine, as it were, then I've got no problem with that. I think he's proven more than capable of being doing so.
So if his conversion rate is the element that needs to be improved, what's the best thing that Fulham can do to help him improve that? Better wingers, better quality crosses, a better number 10 actually playing the ball into his feet? But what's the most effective way for us to actually help him up to the next level?
I think new signings would make a slight difference. But on top of that, I think it's simple, but it's just practice. You just keep playing. Like, he's obviously getting opportunities in the first place. To be able to have five shots on goal per game almost means you're getting in the right positions and you're having attempts on goal. Maybe less bicycle kicks and scissor kicks, and you might lift your conversion rate slightly.
Just more finesse shots, just side foot it in.
I mean, your conversion rate's obviously going to be incredibly high if you're only scoring tap-ins, but we're not really a team who are able to score tap-ins every week. So, yes, you can sign an extra winger that might put in a few extra crosses for him, but I don't think that at the end of the day, it comes down to him. The ball lands on his head. He has to put it away. And, you know, he's actually very good at getting himself in positions in the first place to put the ball away. So I think that will just come naturally as he gets older, as he gets a bit wiser. He's only 22, so he's still got a very long way to go. You know, probably reach a peak at about 26, sort of between 25 and 28, I'd say. So he's still years off his peak. It will come. I'm not too fussed about that. The question I pose to both of you then, if we're fairly comfortable with Muniz potentially being the starting striker next season, how do we approach the transfer market? Do we look at bringing in a young striker? I know we've been linked with a young striker out of Turkey recently, an 18-year-old. Do we go down the path of bringing in some talented youth, or do we look down this sort of Raul Jimenez path, but maybe someone with a bit more prowess than Jimenez?
I'd love to release Raul Jimenez. I don't like what he's doing to our wage bill. I think Vinny, we can get rid of Vinny as well. And I'd love to have a young Tearaway in there, and then maybe a kind of a better version of Jimenez in terms of someone older who we don't have any wild aspirations for, but someone you know who can do the job and be absolutely great and be really good for 15 minutes max a game. Seeing out his career at Fulham, a wise old head to work with Muniz as well and teach him a few tricks. I'd love that sort of mix.
Yeah. I mean, I was just sort of thinking about who is kind of that late 20s Premier League experience, but not necessarily the most sought-after striker, but who could potentially do something off the bench, that like an Iheanacho at Leicester, that kind of player. I think he wouldn't be a bad impact sub, and I don't think he'd be too heavy on the wage bill either. But I do think that we've got to have some trust in youth as well. I think Stansfield, for me, has shown that he's got the bottle to sort of get amongst it, to be able to score, I think it's like 11 or 12 goals this year in a really struggling, awful Birmingham side. I think he definitely deserves a shot, at least in pre-season, for Marco to bring the squad back and assess and see where we stand. But for me, I think we've got some key players going out, you know, Tosin being one of them, Willian potentially being one of them. I think Declan Dover-Reed has been offered a contract, but I don't know if it's been signed. But obviously, if you start losing these sort of fringe players, then you need to replace those as well. So I think we need to really go for some quality in the wings. But also we need to build a squad that Marco can use around the sort of the fringes as well. So I think that's why we're starting to see a bit more urgency in this transfer window. With all the links that were sort of coming across. And I think if you believe the Turkish press, like you say, we've had a bid knocked back already for an 18-year-old striker, but could be agent talk. But we need to be able to take that next level, I think. And that's something I've always talked about, which is we do have a decent squad, but we don't have a great squad in terms of, sort of pushing for that European space which is the next step for Fulham, for me, in my eyes. Therefore, I think we're probably going to see probably about 6 or 7 come in this summer, if I'm honest.
I really hope so. And look, I think the fact that there's already talk around bids being put in, and again, may just be agent chatter, but it is a positive sign to see that, you know, 3 games still to go in the season. We're only just into May, but it seems like Fulham are potentially already making offers for players. It was dead quiet about 2 weeks ago on the transfer front. All of a sudden in the last couple of weeks, it's raised massively. And we're seeing, you know, daily news of new players that we're linked with. And it's kind of exciting to see that. But it does also make me think, and I think we're all on the same page, that it seems like there's going to be quite a few outgoings this summer. and we're going to have to replace a lot of those players with some new faces. I'd love to see some of our youth step up, but realistically, I don't think they're quite. Can we afford to? I don't think they're at the same level that we need them to be at the moment. They're talented youngsters, but they're not going to keep us in the Premier League, which is first and foremost what we need to be doing.
Well, you can see the step up, can't you? Like, if you take some of the squad that got us promoted, like, I think, wasn't it Harry Wilson got sort of like 10 goals and 20 assists or something in the Championship? Mm. And he hasn't necessarily set it alight. It's a huge step. So,
I mean,
we'd love to give them all the time in the world, but you need to be patient with them and sort of mold them in the right way. But, going back to the transfers.
I was going to say, we talk about Gotto in the same sense where Gotto's been playing in League One this year. And yes, he's had a very good season, but the step from League One to the Premier League is huge. Yeah. Sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to say for the transfer strategy, if we are seeing an improvement in getting in a bit earlier, I think we have to give a massive thank you to All Elite Wrestling, knocking some sense into Tony Khan and maybe woke him up a little bit.
Hopefully. let's push through and have a look at Brentford's recent form. It's a little bit up and down. It's an interesting read. A 1-0 loss to Everton, who are obviously in a bit of a relegation scrap. A 5-1 win against Luton, though, and a 2-0 win against Sheffield United. A couple of games that they would, I expect, be expecting to win, and they did so quite well. A 3-0 draw with Villa is quite a good result, and a 0-0 with Brighton, who, not the Brighton of the last couple of years. Dad, looking at those results, can you pick up much from that?
I think a 3-0 draw against Aston Villa is actually quite impressive, to be honest. I mean, 5-1 Luton. I'm not going to kind of take too much from that. It's about where I think they are, to be honest. And I'm not fearful of this one at all. And these derbies are always. They take on a life of their own. It kind of defies form in many ways, to be honest, Jack. I think it comes down to whoever's up for it.
Yeah, completely agree. I think the Villa one is actually more impressive is because they were 2-0 down, I believe. And then they got it back to 3, and then they were 3-2 up. And then I think Ollie Watkins scored late on. And then I think there was something going on in the last minute where Villa should have or could have won it. I think there was a goal chalked off, but to be 2-0 down at Villa Park and show a bit of bottle about you and come back is very impressive. Very mixed bag, Brentford. It's tough. I know we say this week in, week out, but I would say that everyone, and we can see that looking at the stats from most sort of Premier League defenses, is that it's been a real mixed bag this year. Anyone can beat anyone, and it's just really hard to sort of go off sort of the recent form of who's going to turn up and do what. I mean, Everton, fair enough, they were really threatened for relegation, so they've kind of had that kick up the backside and got themselves out of it, therefore they're always going to sort of go into that game and basically come out with a win, I think. But I think now that they're safe, they've had a bit of a transitional year without Ivan Toney. Therefore, you know, they're kind of really got eyes on the next year, much as probably Fulham have as well. So I think it's going to be an interesting game, but it's going to take on the West London derby aspect. The fans are going to be riled up and that will rile the players up. So it'd be interesting to see what kind of either side, really, of what Fulham and Brentford turn out.
I know it's a cliche, but geez, you do want an early goal for us, don't you? I mean, really.
I think we're always begging for an early goal. It never seems to come, though. last 10 for both Fulham and Brentford. Fulham in slightly better form at the moment, 14 points on the last 10 games, 4 wins, 2 draws, 4 losses. Brentford with just the 2 wins in their last 10, 4 draws, 4 losses. Goal differences fairly similar. Brentford with +1, Fulham with +3. I think, as you both said, you can't really read too much into the form when you're coming into a derby like this. Both teams will be up for it. Both teams will want to get one over each other. So a quick look at the table. Fulham currently sitting 13th. 43 points on the board with 3 points ahead of Palace, but with a much better goal difference. A win could take us up as high as 11th, skipping over Brighton and Wolves. Brentford sitting in 16th at the moment on 35 points. A win would take them above Everton. But as we've already said, they are safe at the moment. They're 10 points clear of Luton with 3 games to play. So a little bit to play for Brentford. You know, a couple of wins in the last few games, they could climb as high as 13th potentially, but it's definitely more in it for Fulham, I'd say, in terms of climbing up the table before the end of the season. Couple of questions just to end off. First one here, these have all come from our Discord. MYS2020 says, can you discuss the Thomas Frank dark arts, the fake short throw-in turning into a long throw-in, playing for penalties in the box theory, and should we look to adopt them? And have we already started with Leno going down against Palace? Skibby, I'll throw it to you first.
I mean, I feel like it's too much credit to say that it's Thomas Frank's dark arts. I think it's very much anyone's that they've just adopted. But no, I think it's a certain thing. I think it matters more on what you want from the game, is the way that you're going to see the team play out. And I think with Brentford having to go through a very quick sort of transition without Tony, they need to find ways to win. Therefore, last minute, they've kind of adopted certain things of, you know, to get points. You know, I'm going to launch this in. Oh, wait, actually, no, I'm going to pass it back to the fullback who will then just play it short to me. It's, you know, it's the dark arts, as they say, but it's the way you win games. And if you're really scrapping to take every point you can get, then fair enough. The only reason I can say that Fulham necessarily don't or haven't really sort of gone down this route is probably because, one, when we've been sort of in a good position against the good teams, or we've more or less had the ball and had a tactic that's working, like Arsenal comes to mind, where we actually did play quite well, where we didn't need to use the dark arts. But then when you sort of come against the smaller teams, we've either been losing, so we can't waste time and do anything like that, or we've had the sort of strength to get back into the game. So I think that's probably why we haven't seen it as much at Fulham, because we're playing in sort of or overachieving, as it were, under Marco. Should we adopt them? I think it's definitely a game by game kind of theory. If we're, you know, 1-0 up against Chelsea, 89th minute, then, or, you know, maybe 80th minute, then yeah, absolutely. Let's wind that clock down if we can see that we're under the cosh a little bit. It's all about game management. It's really much something that you don't necessarily work on in training. It's just very much an ideology which you can impact, and like a switch you can turn on and off when you want. I'm sure that the Thomas Frank dark arts, as it's put here, is not really being used if they're 1 or 2 nil down.
Yeah, I think if I look at, maybe there's a couple of different types of managers. There's the managers like the, you know, the Peps, the Klopps, Ange Postecoglou type managers, and I'd certainly put this is not the short list, but certainly I would put Silver in that group as well. The thinking kind of manager, the real strategist and tactician. So I think concentrate less on the so-called dark arts. I regard game management, you know, in the last 3 minutes, you've got to win the game. That doesn't mean your keeper goes down. But it might mean, you know, locking the ball in the corner and just not necessarily putting the ball into open play and exposing yourself. That's entirely different from a kind of cheats, if you like, out and out cheat moves. And I think you're right. I think, Frank has probably found himself in a pretty difficult situation where he's scrapping for survival. So maybe it's in the forefront of his mind to bloody do anything he can. And I just don't think Silva has that mindset. I think Silva is very positive, and he's very dogged about, he has his plans, he sticks to them. And I don't think we get distracted by all this other shite. And I long may that continue, because I don't really want to be watching my team do that week in, week out, and to have that dominate the way we play football, it's not attractive. It's not entertaining. It's you might get results, but you know, I'm not interested in that. I hope we don't go down that path.
I think it's one of those things where it's kind of unfortunately part of the game now. And if you don't adapt, you get left behind. We saw what a difference it made when Leno went down against Palace. We were shocking for the first 30 minutes. All of a sudden, Leno goes down. All the players were instantly across to Silva without even a second thought. He had a chat with them, a bit of a bollocking, and it was a different team all of a sudden. So I think if you can't beat them in a way, you have to kind of join them. Is it cheating? You're not actually scoring goals off the back of it. You're taking a breather and call it a tactical timeout, if you will. I don't love the short throw into long throw and the time wasting aspect of a lot of these things where, and playing for penalties in the box, that's a entirely different thing altogether where you are actually trying to get an unfair advantage and trying to cheat the game. Time wasting as well. We see it all the time. I don't love that. Taking a bit of a tactical time out, I don't hate. I understand why teams do it, and it doesn't give you any kind of actual cheating advantage, but it definitely helps the team settle a little bit and it gives the manager an opportunity to talk to them.
It's not only an opportunity to talk to them, reset, change tactics and communicate new tactics. It's absolutely designed to disrupt the flow of the other team, who are absolutely all over you and are likely to actually make a count any minute. And that's, I think that's the pressure release that the tactic is actually aimed at. What I was trying to get to, Jack, was that I don't think this stuff crosses Pep's mind. He's got a world-class squad. He doesn't have to. So he plays to win, and he focuses on trying to do it with a ball at his players' feet, adopting their plans and playing their own game. And I think if you're not that good a side and scrapping for your life, then maybe you'll throw a few rabbit punches and a couple of knees in the balls. And you might pull a knife. Let's be honest.
Yeah. I mean, the reason we haven't seen it as much is because Silva's been right in his tactical preparations for the match. So if it's going all completely wrong, then yeah, he's going to have to change it up, hence what happened against Palace. But the fact that we haven't seen this happen, nor have we really been in positions where we're like, oh Christ, they were really all over us, we need to do something. Apart from Palace, I can't really think of times where that happened, apart from the switch offs where, you know, Sheffield United raced away because Fulham just didn't switch on. That stuff you can't really help tactically. That's just all the players' mentalities. But there's not really been a time where we've been really under the cosh where we needed a reset like we did against Palace. So by not having to need to do it, I feel like Silva's got it right, and therefore we just don't need to at that point. But it's good to have in your arsenal, I suppose.
I agree. I
think one step further, even if we haven't got it right and we're actually not doing that well, he still sticks to it. He wants his tactics to prevail.
Sorry, yeah, Jack. Well, no, you're right. I think it's probably he has a confidence that what he's doing will work eventually. But I think we've now been able to see the impact that it has, and I expect we'll see it more often now because of that. Because, like I said, in that Palace game, that first 30 minutes was dire. We all of a sudden made whatever kind of tactical change or whatever chat Silva had with the players made such a big difference that I think that now is always going to be in his back pocket, and he'll always be thinking to himself, if I really need to disrupt the game and change it up, that's the way we do it going forward. I guarantee the Premier League will find some way to lock it down in the coming seasons because it's going to be detrimental to the big clubs. But I'm not against us doing something along those lines, and at least something to gain some sort of advantage. At the end of the day, that's what you do it for. Final question here. This one's from Colm. with a few of our first team squad looking to be probably moved on next season, will Marco actually bring in some of our younger squad members before the season finishes? Now, a caveat, the under-21s are playing cup quarterfinals at the moment. They play Nottingham Forest, I think, coming up fairly soon. So they got a quarterfinal against Forest.
Oh, right.
So it's in the latter stages. I think they play quarterfinal semis next week and final the week after. Or maybe even a midweek game in the middle there.
So that's a separate cup then, because the Premier League 2 Cup, we're in the final four, aren't we? We beat Chelsea 4-0. And then, I know that Spurs are playing Nottingham Forest tomorrow in a semi-final. But I might have misread, and it might be like a league.
But yeah, I'll double check that. But
while
you're
looking that up, I can give you a short answer, Colm.
Fly in.
No. Just because it's not Marco's way. And we talked about certain aspects, which is that, one, he's quite stubborn, he's quite set in his ways, and also the step up between under-21s, Championship, EFL, and the Premier League is just an absolute gulf. You don't really want to put a player in who could get completely, like, wreck their confidence, especially if we've got Man City coming up. Probably wouldn't want to put them against them. Potentially Luton. But that could be a really ugly game if Luton is still within a chance of staying up, that you don't really want to throw Tanton in at right back and he'd get absolutely shredded by Ogbene just because they're fighting for something. I guess the elements are, you've probably got, I reckon, three youth players who are probably ready for first team action, which would probably be Stansfield, Godo, Harris, and Piazziti. So just because the other three are out on loan, I'm still on the fence about De Fougerolles, if I'm honest. Not his quality, just the position he wants to play, and he's quite lightweight. I just don't think he's ready at 17, 18. At centre back, to put him in, I think would be quite harsh. I just can't see it happening. I just don't think we've got... I think it's different if you're going to put in a youth winger. I think wingers can make an impact because they're not necessarily expected to do anything like scoring goals. They're just kind of there and get on the ball. Like, I remember sort of when Patrick Roberts burst onto the scene, and even Stansfield, we put him on the wing kind of out of the way. I just don't think we've probably got that sort of player waiting in the wings to sort of come in. All of our sort of top talents seem to be in really crucial areas where you can sort of, where a game is won and lost, and I just can't see them coming in.
You're dead right. And I think size and bulk, you know, or rather speed, doesn't necessarily come with age. You know, you can be 17 and very, very fast, and so you could be quite effective on the wing. Whereas if you're in a position like a centre back and you're not big enough, you're not bulky enough, that's a really big disadvantage. And that can come in just a couple of years in the gym. And you know, even if you grow an inch, but you just put on a lot of bulk, that'll make a big difference. Yeah. But you're right, all our players with some promise are actually in really key positions. And we're not in a position to actually roll the dice on that.
No.
Well, I've done my digging and found out what the under-21s are actually doing. The PL2 competition now ends with basically a playoff system. So you have the top 16 clubs go into a last 16. Fulham finished third, so they play against Forest, who finished 13th. So the last 16 is played. I think we play our game on the 4th or the 3rd of May. The quarterfinals played the week after, semi the week after that, and the final the week after that. So the under-21 season actually finishes the week after the Premier League finishes. So I'd say with Fulham being involved there, unless we got knocked out in the early stages, which I'd say is fairly unlikely, seeing as the playoff is seeded, and Fulham were easily one of the best teams in the league this season. I'd be very surprised if the under-21s were released to play first-team football before the end of the season. I'd love to see it happen, but with this new system in place, I just don't see it happening. And I'd rather us actually put a bit of focus on maybe winning the PL2 and having those players get a little bit more confidence through that avenue. I'm not sure if players like Stansfield and Gotto, who finished up their league seasons, actually get a chance to come back and participate. Probably not. But, I think I'd love to see it happen, but not going to happen, unfortunately. Guys, we can wrap it up there. It's been a really good one talking about this game coming up this weekend. It's a big derby game. Fingers crossed we do get a good result here. A big thank you to everyone who's followed along on the live stream. Big thanks to all of the people who've joined on the Discord in the last week or so. Really appreciate all the support and really appreciate all the interaction we've had on there so far. It's been great to see that grow slowly but surely, and we hope that it will keep growing going forward as well. Skibby, thanks very much for joining us tonight.
That's all good. Thank you very much for having me, and best of luck to those who got the golden ticket and get to go to Brentford on Saturday. I know a lot of people are asking about tickets, but like gold dust. But no, enjoy the day. I'll be watching from afar, and hopefully we get one over on them. Can't wait.
Yeah, it's a real mad scramble. We've seen it in the Discord and the tickets channel. There's not many tickets going and a lot of people wanting, but do keep an eye out, especially following Fulham Spares. I think it's Fulham_Spares on Twitter, yep, who retweets anyone who's putting forward any tickets. So do follow Fulham_Spares or jump into the Discord tickets channel for updates. Dad, thank you for joining tonight.
Yep, thank you very much. Enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to a spiteful and entertaining game where hopefully we get a win.
Fingers firmly crossed. Thank you again, everyone. And as always, come on, you Whites.